It's a pleasure to have you all join us today. This kicks off our new group, our new cohort, as Enoch describes it, of members who are going through Architects Marketing Academy. And I know we have also members who have been with us for a while but want to start over with the basics and just make sure that they're getting their marketing system set up step by step. We'll have a group of new and veteran members. And really look forward to sort of working with you to get moving.
This is a very big topic. It's very important that you understand it, and it's very important you do the first exercise. It's kind of like the foundations of a house. If you build your house on solid foundations, as the metaphor goes, then everything works out well. But if you build your house on shaky foundations, obviously everything else can you're compromising it. So the whole premise behind this 80-20 principle, as you would see in the training, it's very important you go and watch the video in the training that explains the concept. But some of the underlying principles behind the 80-20 principle is that not all clients or not all types of niches or markets are equal, and some niches or sub-markets are far better to be working in and trying to target than others. Okay, now. There's two options. I know a lot of architects like to be generalists, and that's fine, you can be. But when you're doing a marketing campaign, you want your marketing campaign to be focused on one thing at a time. So it's kind of like fishing. There are certain all lots of different fish in the sea, and some of them are better to eat than others. And for each fish you're trying to catch, you've got a separate fishing rod, you've got a separate bait, you've got a separate line. And so you've got a specific fishing rod for each job. So what catches, say, cod is not the type of fish that you want, fishing rod you want to catch a marlin. So, and it's a very important concept. So it doesn't mean you can't deal with lots of different clients, but it does mean when you create a little marketing exercise, when you create a little client getting, systems that we talk about, that you want, one for each sort of niche. So that was the exercise. We got you to do that exercise. And if you haven't done it, please do the exercise. What we're going to do today is run through some of the responses that some people have sent their forms back to us on how they've answered it, and we're going to go through it and just review what they've said and add comment, and hopefully it's a learning exercise as much as anything else. So I'm just going to jump into the am I in the right one? Q&A submissions. Okay, so we've got one here from Barry. And how is that looking in terms of seeing my screen? Is that visible? So okay, I think everyone else is muting themselves. So you need to type in, and oh, Enoch or Eric, if you guys come in, if you can't see it. So that's page one of the modules. Some key points there. Then I ask you to go through and list what are some of the different areas that you could serve. What are the different subgroups or niches within the area? So what Barry's got here is he's got banks and credit unions,
So
banquet halls,
Richard,
funeral
before
homes.
you go on, just
Yes.
can you enlarge that?
Okay, so Barry's got different groups here: banks, banquet halls, funeral homes, motels, multi-family housing, restaurants, retail. So he's got as you can see, he's like a lot of architects. There's lots of different niches. Where do I start? Okay, well, you start by analyzing them all. Okay, let's assess them. So let's see what he's put banks and credit unions. And normally people will start off with that one they think will be best. So let's see what he's got. Okay, the question is, does he have a specific problem? Yep, their problem is they want projects to finish on time and on budget. Okay, and the second problem is evolving retail banking models. Okay, so the banks, I think he's saying the banks like to change how their layout is. They're quite innovative and they're trying to get an edge on everybody else with their layout and things like that. Okay, how motivated are they? They're 8 out of 10. Okay, so pretty high. Already spending money? Yes, 8 out of 10. Are they economically reachable? Yeah, it's not like too hard to find banks. We sort of know, it's not like they're a needle in a haystack. We can go straight to them. Do you have an advantage? Okay, so Barry says, yep, BIM, affiliated, I'm a BIM affiliated estimator, my research and completed projects. So he's got a portfolio. Okay, good. Okay, lack of perceived options. This is a bit lower, five. Okay, so there are quite a few options for banks. And are they good to deal with? He says eight. Okay, so in total, he's given The banks, credit unions, and financial institutions, a total of 37. All right. Oops. Well, that's interesting. I haven't done that before. We're on full screen. Okay. He then did banquet halls and community use, and he rated them a little bit. Four out of ten already spending. Okay, they're not spending as much money. They're a little bit harder to reach. Same sort of advantages that he has. Lack of perceived options are a bit higher though. And good to deal with? Not quite as good to deal with, obviously. Not quite. So they got a 31. Okay, so what we're doing is we're just going through all the different possible niches. We're just using, you know, you might have other criteria, but these are the ones I sort of think of to assess them. And it's just, it's turning, I guess we intuitively do it in our head, but sometimes it's good to have a logical checklist to go through to find out. Okay, we've got funeral homes, right, they're now they rank much lower on already spending money, so they're not spending as much money. Okay, and same sort of thing, on time, on budget, they certainly have specialty equipment that you have to deal with, absolutely. So 34, hotels, motels, let's look at anything, lack of perceived, okay, they have less specialists in that area, so that's not a bad thing. And these are a bit lower, okay, so 28, 28. Okay, so, and he's done quite a lot, he's done a good job here. So if we go through and go to the summary, what's the right niches to target? He's after doing all this, interesting. Workspaces and banks. So niche number 8, workspaces, scored 38 points to lead the pack. Niche number 1 scored 37 points, so just behind. So that's interesting. In many respects, they're quite similar, both essential workspaces. However, banks have much greater level of public use and exposure. Okay, great. So that could be two areas that that Barry looks to target. So what's the wrong niches to target? Family, housing, and okay. I think he likes the more professional clients who have systems and processes in place and probably have lots of money. Okay, so that's fair enough. Now, for you, the interesting thing for you, you know, if you're looking at this, your target market may be multifamily housing or restaurants. Nothing wrong with that. Just, you know, it's kind of subjective when you're answering these questions out of 10. So for Barry, obviously he prefers the workspaces and banks, whereas you may prefer multifamily housing. No issue with that. It's how you rate it based on your perceptions and criteria. But it does force you to think about this in a logical way. All right, that is good. Is Barry on the line? Just see if Barry's on the line, guys. Just minimise this thing. Okay, let's. What have we got here? Let's have a look at someone else. So if there's any questions, just type them in because I sort of want this to be obviously as interactive as possible. So who have we got here? I'll just go out. Who was this? This is Croft. Is it some Croft? We'll just call you Greg Croft. Okay, there we go.
I'm just wondering before we move on if anyone has any questions for what Richard just did. Since Barry isn't on, perhaps if some of you have similar niches or similar, you know, just have gone through that process. If you do, feel free to type it into the questions box.
Yeah, and for the first couple, we'll go through the questions. I'll go through the questions a little bit more detailed here, but it's important to understand how to fill out this action sheet. So if you've got any questions that you think, oh, that's a dumb question, please ask it because, you know, half the call will probably think it's a question they've got as well. So dumb questions are invited and welcome. Not too dumb, but dumb's all right. All right.
Stephen Mayer asks, how do you assess the size of the market? Perhaps the niche is too narrow.
Yes. Yep. It's supply and demand, so it's not so much a case. A narrow niche is okay, as long as there's not many competitors. And likewise, you could have a large niche, but if it's full of competitors, it's harder. You know, unless you think you can outmarket them. So how do you assess it? Well, ultimately, it's how many jobs and how much money is being spent. How do you find that out? It depends on the niche, you know, but you could probably you probably have a sense. If it's a niche that you're interested in, then you probably sort of have an indication in your own head as to, you know, there's deals happening there, you know, there's projects happening. We know that probably in banks there's more money being spent, in the banking area than there is in the funeral home area. So yeah, it depends on the niche. I can't really give you an answer on how to go out there, but there will be probably figures somewhere. But otherwise, just use your own intuition with it. Sorry, I can't give a better answer than that, but it depends on the market.
So I wonder if, since Enoch is the architect in our group, if you have any specific insights on niche selection from your perspective, having done healthcare and, development projects and the like.
I mean, it's a broad topic, and obviously, I just admit myself, it takes a little while for it to recognize. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. What I started to say was that it really is a broad topic, finding a niche. I think that there's probably no more powerful strategy for boosting the income of your practice and the kind of projects that you get than focusing on a tight niche. Many people go way too, they cast the net way, way too broad. It's okay to be everything to everyone on your website or perhaps in the kind of projects that you really do take in, but like Richard said, when you're crafting a marketing message, it needs to be very, very tightly focused. And I'll just give one real world example of that we're all probably familiar with. If everyone thinks about Amazon, when Amazon.com started out, over the past 5 years, we've seen Amazon really take the retail space by storm. When they started out, though, they didn't start out as an online realtor, retailer, sorry. What they started out as was they sold used books, and that was it. So they started, they focused on a narrow niche where there wasn't a lot of competition. They were able to dominate that niche, and then they were able to get out there and spread their influence. So it kind of goes back to the question of, would you rather be a little fish in a big pond or a big fish in a little pond? If I'm starting out or if I'm wanting to grow my practice, I'd rather be the big fish in the little pond, and that's where we come into this 80-20 targeting that we're talking about here. Does that make sense?
That's a great answer. That's a great answer. And you know, it doesn't mean you can't do things like Enoch's saying. It's just your marketing message for that particular group has its own fishing rod, its own bait, and its own hook. It doesn't mean you can't have three fishing rods. But ideally, you establish yourself in one, and if you find you need another one, you then create another fishing rod and bait in another one. So what we're teaching you is teaching you about how to set up the fishing rod, the bait, the line, the hook for each niche. You can have 10 if you think you need 10. But you probably don't. You'll end up spreading yourself too thin. So this is the process. All right, good
There is
answers.
a question from Timon asking, and I think this would be good before proceeding. Can you quickly go over the eight issues for each niche? So just sort of a very high level, what are the I know it's already been in the lesson materials, but for reference here, maybe 1 minute for each one of the eight.
All right, let's do it. Okay, so well, the exercise is just to go along. It's just start off, identify all the different areas that you think are potential niches, and then assess them. So niche name. So what you do, number one, you give them a name, so we can label it. Number two, do they have a specific problem for that niche? It's always good if they've got a problem, because if you can come along and be the person who knows the problem, can articulate the problem, and then has a ready-made solution for that problem, then instead of going in as, hey, I'm Richard Petrie, architect, you can go in and say, hey, if you've got this problem, I have a specific solution for you. Can you see the difference? Right? Because people are more motivated to solve their problems than they are to hire an architect. Okay, so in this specific problem, okay, number three, how motivated are they to solve this problem? Okay, we're sort of jumping out a bit beyond, like, I need an architect. It's yes, we need an architect too, because we need this specific problem solved. How motivated are they to solve it? Number four, are they already spending money to solve this problem or to on architecture even? Are they already spending money in this area of construction, this particular group? Or, you know, I mean, because some niches, like banks, we know they're spending money. Banks are spending money. Restaurants, you might say, well, the good ones are, but there's a lot that really just make do with what they've got because they're, you know, they're not making as much money as they used to. So some industries are spending a lot, others aren't spending much at all. You're better off to be in an area that where they're already spending money and then say, I'll go in there and I'll outmarket everybody, because we can teach you that in the academy, right? We can teach you to outmarket them probably, than going into a niche where there's not much money being spent. And even if you did a brilliant marketing job, there's still not much money being spent. Okay, so you want them to be spending money already. So out of 10, give them a rating out of that. Number five, are they economically reachable? Can we get hold of the decision makers? If it's banks, do we have a strategy for getting through to the right people? Or can we even find them? Like, it's much harder to find residential people who will do a renovation on a house, because where are they? They're all over the place. But if you target doctors, medical rooms, well, you can look them up on the phone book. We can find them and we can find the name of the person running the practice, say, or the owner. So how reachable are they as this group? Number six, do you have an advantage? Is there something special you do? Have you worked out, do you have, you know, special systems or processes, or can you get a unique result that no one else can get? Or do you have particular experience that more than anyone else that looks really good? Number seven, lack of perceived options. So, you know, how many options do they think they have? Do these people think they have? Do they think they have lots of options that anyone can do it? Maybe residential may think that. But if you're talking, you know, Peter Prober, who does specialist studios for sports teams and sort of TV show sets, very specialist area. How many architects can we go to design a set for our TV studio? Well, probably not many. Okay, so not many perceived options, but residential probably lots of perceived options. And is this niche good to deal with? Do you like working with them? Do they fit with you? Do you like dealing with these type of people, or do you find them hard work? So you just rate them on those things. So that's a bit of an overview on the questions. Okay, so let's have a look at what Greg has answered here. So they need a licensed professional, they're very price conscious, okay, motivated, high, already spending money, economically reachable. Okay, now what's the advantage for niche one, which is MOB? I'm not sure what MOB is. What was MOB? It looks a good niche, 44, he's given it a rating of 44, so whatever MOB is, just go back a page.
Stands for medical office building. So it'd be doctor's offices. They'd normally put them next to the hospital. So, you know, you go to the hospital and next door they have all the doctor's offices in an MOB.
Okay, good. It looks like his asterisk four is you know, when he's gone through this exercise, he's picked out four. So I'm just going to go, what's the right niches to target at the end? It's the medical and new construction. And what's the wrong niches to target? Well, based on Greg's assessment of those criteria, he's got vacation homes. Okay, and yet I know there's other architects who love doing vacation homes, but for him, that's good. So he's now honed in on that. Now, once you've got your niches that you like, then we go through the rest of the exercises in the Architects Marketing Academy. You know, you might want to strongly consider building everything just on the areas that, you know, that you think are the best areas for you. Yeah, so you're building a fishing rod and your bait and your line specifically for medical offices. So, all right, so that's interesting. That's what Greg thinks. I know we've got lots of others, so I don't want to... if Greg's here, Michael Tolhurst, okay. We know he's here. Let's see what Greg, Michael's got to say. So Michael's based in Australia. Very neat and tidy, isn't it? Goodness. Very neat and tidy. So his areas, he's thought, these are the different niches: sustainable design, passive solar design, passive design, or passive house. These passive house guys, they love their passive house, don't they? Design and construction suitable to the Canberra climate. It's a good idea. Okay, number three, co-housing. 4 knockdown rebuilds in the inner suburbs, 5 alterations and additions, 6 high-end new houses, 7 new houses, 8 builder-developer projects. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, everybody can come up with a different set of niches, and they might be working in the same market. It just depends on how you define it. There's no law on how you have to define a niche, but you know, in a way, how you define them, you know, determines how you rate them. So it's an art more than a science, but we're trying to add a little bit of science by having this rating system. All right, let's have a look how he does sustainable design. Okay, looking at that. Okay, clients who feel a need for moral, social, and environmental responsibility to reduce their impact of their lives on the environment. Okay, he's rated them reasonably lowish compared to other people. Mid-range, okay, that's interesting. Let's see how he rates passive house. I knew he had a bit of a fetish for passive house, so he's rated this higher, hasn't he? And good detail in his answers here. So he's gone, what's the specific problem for the people, for passive house potential clients? Canberra housing is generally quite poor quality and isn't well suited to the climate. People want to be warm in winter and cool in summer. They want lower heating and cooling costs, but still with lots of daylight connected to outdoor space is great. So the good thing here is that Canberra can be hot, and it can be really hot, and it can be cold. Actually, Strings from Canberra is our sort of behind the scenes special ops partner. He's now in I think he's in Mexico at the moment, but he tends to move around a bit. But he's from Canberra. So that's good that you've identified a good little problem, that we need houses that can be hot and cold because the climate's so extreme. He's rated them reasonably high in motivation, reasonably economically reachable. These clients are likely to be more affluent, living in inner suburbs where the existing house stock is old and reaching the end of its life. So flyers and letterboxes maybe, through the local real estate agents, posters in local shops. Okay, so he's got some ideas on how he can reach them already. What's his advantage? I'm from Canberra. I know the climate. I'm motivated to provide appropriate solutions. I plan to build my own home in a couple of years as a case study. Great. I'm considering undertaking passive house training to differentiate myself and establish myself as an expert specialist. Right. Okay, he doesn't have that yet, but he's obviously got an interest in it and probably has a large degree of knowledge and a bit of skill in that area already. Lack of perceived options. There are numerous practices spruiking themselves as sustainable passive house eco, but not many walk the walk and back it up with data or evidence. Right. I would say that maybe, by the sound of it, you do have data or evidence, then maybe that is your advantage or your differentiator, that you're a bit, you know, you're a bit more scientific about it. There's a lot of, you know, you educate people that there are people talking a good game, but when it comes down to it, here's how you need to be hiring an architect, you know, passive house, and you tell them all the things they need to have in place. You teach them, you know, how to hire a passive house architect, and particularly around the data and the evidence. That's always an area. Someone's being a wee bit noisy. They're turning pages or something. Is it you, Eric?
Actually, I think I unmuted. That might be Michael. I unmuted his line just in case we wanted to talk to him about his selections here, Richard.
Oh, okay.
Michael, are you on the line
Michael
now?
Thomas. Yeah.
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, we can hear you. You're awake? What's the time in Canberra?
Oh, about 6:30.
Ah, oh, sit hard enough, Canberra. So how's things down there, Michael?
Cold at this time of year.
Oh, okay, good. Good, good, good. So, hey, give us an overview of what you've done here with these different niches. Rather than me go through them, you've got, you started out with sustainable design. Not much detail on that. You didn't rate it very highly, so you obviously moved. I can see with passive house you've got more interest there by even just what you've written.
Well, I think the sustainable design option, it's more of a holistic approach and involves so many other aspects. So I was trying to dial down into just the problems that I could solve as...
Yeah, right.
Problems I could help to solve as an architect in terms of the construction of houses and the design of houses,
right,
rather than everything else that's involved in being sustainable.
Yeah, right. It's more manageable. It's a more of a chunk that you can chew off. The narrower it is, that's I can see what you're doing there. Okay, so as you went through this, let's have a look. You've got co-housing. It's nice and neat. I like how neat it is, and it's very good. As an architect, I'd like to see all that. That's good. Okay, so what stands out? Where's your summary? What's the right niches? Just go through the your findings at the end of this.
Well, I think some of them might actually overlap somewhat. And I think particularly the any type of work in the inner suburbs here in Canberra, where we do see a lot of urban renewal. Older houses are being knocked down and new houses are being rebuilt in their place because the existing houses have reached the end of their lifespan. They've probably been there for 40 years now and they're all tired. So it seems that it is a reachable market one way or another because I can see them happening.
Yeah, right. You just need a pair of good sneakers to rain shoes to get around the neighbourhood.
Yeah, that's right.
That's good. What was I going to say? Oh, it's really good. If you pick a niche and it's something in a city neighbourhood, it's good to give it a label and a name. I don't know if you did that. What do we call it? Which niche was it? Was it the number two, was it? Passive House?
Yeah.
Now, Passive House is good because that's an official name. But if you're talking specifically in the, you're talking about the inner suburb neighbourhoods where housing stock is old. If you could come up with a name, I had a client once. We called it Eco. You give it your own label, and then when you're talking to these people or you're putting out the flyers, you use that term, which sort of makes common sense, but it's your term. You almost own the term for it. And then as soon as they start talking about it, they're using your term to label their type of house, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah, and particularly if you're going to put out educational material, you keep banging on about this you give it a name. Ecolux, that was the one we had. So this guy was, he was in the New York State area in the Hudson Valley, and he said, I like they're sort of holiday houses for wealthy people from New York, and I like doing eco-environmental, sustainable type design. So he came up with the term Ecolux. I don't know. I think he came up with the term. I don't think it was a new one. But we kept using the word Ecolux, Ecolux, Ecolux everywhere. And that way, those people who are in these or looking for these type of houses, they can say, oh, yeah, we're an Ecolux, we're looking for an Ecolux type design. We even said it's a type of philosophy and a type of design. So if you had in a suburb, in a suburban neighbourhoods where you're looking to do regeneration in a particular way, if you can come up with a label for them and effectively you own the label, it's just really a useful thing from a marketing point to be able to do it.
Okay.
So I don't know if you can think of any good names for that, but okay. So you've got what were the wrong niches to target? Did you think?
I think the high end new homes was probably wrong. It would be right in a way, but I don't have any advantage in that. And there's lots of competition.
Right.
Similarly with the builder developer projects. I have had some conversations with builders trying to see if there are any opportunities, and that seems like it's probably hard work.
Right. It's
driven a lot by the cost, by the bottom line.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to how good a story can you tell to the niche that you've picked out. And obviously, one, you like it, sounds like an area you like, but also if you've got some good you can tell some good stories in that area, and those stories are gold. Whereas the McMansion homes and the developers type stuff, you might say, "Well, I don't have too many good stories. I'll just be another architect to them." Whereas I can be someone a little bit special in the passive house area, and those inner city suburbs. Plus, it's manageable. Like it's a It's still a lot of houses, and there's a lot of work there. And how many job projects do you need? Not that many. But if you can get known in the inner city suburbs as someone who specialises in this type of work, then you become, the thing with this is you become more referable if you become a bit more of a specialist. They'll be looking at projects with your sign on and all that type of stuff. So, any other thoughts doing the exercise for you, Michael? Is this what you would have thought of before you did the exercise? Is this just reinforced it, or is this pulled out ideas that you didn't have before, or what's been your experience doing this exercise?
I think it was a direction I was heading in anyway, but what it's sort of doing is probably making me think a little bit more about, well, how to actually reach out to these potential clients and customers.
Yeah, right.
And confirming my thinking. I mean, I think I am inclined, because it's something that I want to build for myself, my wife and I, in a year or two time. So, you know, I already have a leaning towards this type of thing.
Yeah, and that really helps. So you've got a really close affinity to it. You can get great rapport with people who are looking at doing it because you're also looking at doing it. So you'll understand how they're thinking and how they're feeling, and you'll be able to talk a pretty good game on this one. So it makes sense that you head down that path.
We have a request just to change the screen back to the passive house, because that obviously has the most detailed information, and I think people appreciate being able to see the type of articulate descriptions, you know, that Michael has.
All right. Okay, we're not going to start for too long, so we need to move on. But hey, thanks for that, Michael. That's really good. And by the sound of it, sort of reconfirmed what you were thinking, but just made you think in a little bit more detail. The final point I'll make about this niching is, once you've identified a niche or niches that you're really interested in, it makes it much easier to work out, where do I have to go to fish for them? So just like a fisherman, you know, until you've identified the fish you want to catch, it's hard to know where to go on your boat. You know, if you're going to say I'm an architect, well, that's like just saying, well, let's get the boat and go out and see. But as we know, fish tend to swim in certain, they don't call it a fishing hole for nothing. They tend to stick close to where they live. So in this case, it makes it much easier for Michael now to say, okay, inner city suburbs that need they need their houses rebuilt. Well, that's a lot narrower. He now knows where to go. He can sort of walk around the neighbourhood putting flyers in letterboxes if he wanted to, or he could advertise in those local magazines or local newspapers. But now it's become manageable. But if it's just I'm an architect and I do, you know, architect work, man, that's where do I go? It's like being in the sea. So you want to find a little pocket of the sea that is full of the type of fish you want to catch, and we can do that once we've identified the niche and drilled down on it. Hey, thanks, Michael. Good work.
So we had a request to just get Greg on the line before we move on. So Greg was the one we went through earlier, and I know he's on the line. So
we had a request to get Greg on. From who? From Greg?
So I'm unmuting, I'm opening up Greg's line from Idaho. Greg, how are you doing?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Greg. So what did you do on the stick? I mean, we went through your thing here, but what did you get out of doing the exercise? What insights did you have?
You know, I guess I actually always wanted to do vacation homes. I, you know, living in Idaho, we're close to some nice areas. Jackson Hole, Wyoming is a big ski area in Sun Valley, and I think that's the reason I went into architecture. And
right,
it's a hard market to break into because there's a lot of competition for it. I'm not really, you know, I'm still an hour and a half away from the closest one, and so it was kind of eye-opening, and it's like, okay, this is maybe not what I should be pursuing, even though it kind of is why I went into this profession. But I still like architecture, and so it doesn't really matter that's probably not what I should be focusing on for right
now. Yeah, maybe for right now. But that's good insight, just to have that. It doesn't mean you can't go back to it later when maybe, you know, maybe situations change or something, but... To know, you know, the two questions are, what are the right niches to target and what are the wrong niches to target, you know, what are the niches you shouldn't target. it's just as important to say where you should stay away from sometimes, I think, than it is to know where you should be tagging.
I have two notes here, Richard, that I'd like to add, and it kind of comes along the lines of what Gray just shared with us. I think, Gray, congratulations on doing this worksheet and letting it change your thinking process. So there's two kind of warnings almost that I just want to throw in here. Maybe they're already clear to those of you on the line, but perhaps they're not. So the first one is that this isn't necessarily going to change the way that you, the kind of projects that you take into your firm. So don't necessarily think of this as it's going to change the entire direction of your firm. Think about it in terms of this is a marketing campaign to get more of the kind of fish. You're trying to just identify right now for this marketing campaign that we're going to be putting you through, what kind of fish are you going to be attracting? So what we're doing is we're narrowing that focus, because then the next step is we're going to help you put in place the systems to attract those kind of fish. So that's why this part's so important. The second part is make sure that when you're filling this out, make sure that you don't have on your architect glasses. So that's one of the big dangers of this, is that you go in with a preconceived notion and you think, oh yes, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, because you think something is the way it is. What Greg said that kind of thought was good is that he said that it actually changed his mind. So I think that's a good sign. If you go into this and you end up, it changes the way you think about your niche, or it changes the way you think about your plan, that's probably a good sign. If you go into it and you're just like, yep, yep, already knew all this, yeah, it's just what I thought, then perhaps you need to dig in a little deeper. And I'm just going to give one example with the sustainable design. So as architects, I know that we're very big into sustainable design, and in theory, we think that our clients want to pay for it, because we know that clients like to be in houses that are comfortable, that aren't going to cause sickness, etc., and that we care about the environment. On the other hand, when you actually sit down across the desk from a client and you talk to them about that and you show them the price tag, now I know there's architects who are going to argue that it doesn't cost any more to design sustainably, but when you show them the price tag, I'm sure you'll find a lot of those people saying, oh, well, you know, it's a nice thought, but... yeah, I don't really care about sustainable design as much as I thought I did. So that's one danger. Make sure that when we're doing it, we're not projecting, you're not projecting your architect viewpoint onto what your market really thinks. So one thing that could be useful is actually to call up people that are in these niches, like people that get these kind of projects done, and get some feedback if you're unsure.
Yeah.
Can I say something else? On my medical office buildings, like, so you look at that and those are all nines. One of the things that I've actually gone through, I mean, I'm a newer architect here in Idaho, and even though I'm newer, I guess part of the reason that those are even as high as they are is because I'm willing to work with drafters where it's like I'm acting basically as principal, where they will come to me and say, hey, I've got a project, will you work with me together, or will you work with me on it? And so that allows me to lower my fee, and so that it's more in the ballpark of where the doctors in this area want to be paying, because I've been beat out by these drafters in the past where they've said, hey, I've got an architect that I'll have stamp it, and so I can't do that the way that they've done it, because these are architects that aren't really playing by the rules, but I don't really want to turn them in. That's one of the advantages that I have that I think a lot of the architects that are legitimately practicing in this area are willing to do. So.
Right. That's a good point. Hey, so just on that, this is an 80-20 exercise to say we know not all of the potential clients in the market are equal, and in this case for you, the medical offices, buildings is your pick. You can then go an 80-20 that, okay? So the power comes is when you 80-20 the 80-20. So you take the medical office buildings and you say, right, of all the medical office buildings, let me break that down again into various niches, because they're not all the same either. There's some, you know, and within that, there'll be niches within that, and you might then go again on this exercise and say, right, there's these type of medical offices, there's these type, it might be done on how much they're spending, might be done on where they're located, might be done on how many people there are. And you might do this exercise again. You might find, right, my real sweet spot is the medical office buildings that are this type. And so you're niching the niche. Now, you can't go too narrow, obviously, but it's worth for everybody thinking. You 80-20, the 80-20, and then you end up with something really that you can get your teeth into and potentially a whole lot of new insights come up for you again, because now you know exactly how to reach them, what to say, how to present yourself, and all that type of stuff.
So related to that, there's a suggestion, Richard, from Lauren, who says, perhaps Greg needs to offer a total service to appeal to the doctors to make him more valuable than a draftsman, and then market that as your point of difference. So sometimes figuring out what position you are almost there, but with a little bit of work, you can position yourself and offer a very specific angle on the service so that they go, wow, that's better. You know, we want that. So.
Yeah, or even a range of services. You might say, look, I've got here's the full option where I do everything, or here's the one where I manage and oversee it, and, you know, we pull in drafts people. So gold and silver, you know, you might offer both and give them a chance to pick, because some of them might just want you to do everything. But is there a way you could 80-20 the medical office buildings, Greg?
Honestly, I'm in such a small market. I'm in a community of 50,000. We're kind of the hub, and so to really drill down on it, it's almost like, oh, I just picked a specialist, but I just picked the only one in town, kind of thing. So I don't know if it really makes sense necessarily here. But I understand the idea behind it.
Yeah, and it's the same. You know, we could do the same thing with how do I reach them, and you might come up with 10 different ways to reach them, and then you might rank all the different ways to access these people. We say, right, what's the top 20% of the ways to reach these people? I've got 10 ways. I could do direct email. I could do a letter. I could do a phone call. I could put an ad in the magazines that they read. I could do this, and then you can rate that by 80-20 as well, and pick the best one. Anyway, I think hey, thanks, Greg. That was interesting. Looks like you've done a bit of work and got some new insights and some detail into what you're thinking. So that's good. We'll see if we can answer at the time here. We're coming up to the hour. I see we've still got plenty of other people. There's Otto. Otto's very detailed, but do we have any questions just coming in about this whole exercise and their niches and things like that? So now's the time. We're coming up to the hour, but now's the time to plug in any comments or questions you have.
Mm-hmm. So there is a question that was posted earlier. For those who are interested in going into a niche that they don't have a whole lot of experience or a lot to show in their portfolio. Obviously, sometimes people have worked on particular project types but weren't the lead designer. It was part of a larger office, you know, it was in another, you know, location, whatever. So any suggestions? Maybe Enoch, you can talk a little bit about if you want to go into a niche that you think you're fully capable to do, it's a good niche, but you don't have the portfolio, how do you establish yourself as an expert or an authority so that people say, you know, I believe you can do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And obviously it's a little bit outside the scope of what we're talking about today, which is the 80-20 targeting. The answer is, there's a lot of people in the world that command high fees, right? So there's a lot of people out there that are able to command the best. And there's a couple different ways you could approach the thing of not having a lot of one particular thing in your portfolio. The best way I know is to actually become an expert in that particular category. So if you think about professors or academics at a university, a lot of times, for instance, where I went to school, there's a couple professors who don't have a lot of built work. They frankly haven't built a lot of projects. but because of their writings, because of their academia, because of the papers they've published, they've built up a certain amount of expertise in that field. And now, as time goes on, they're able to pick and choose those kind of projects. So if I'm looking at conquering a new niche that I don't have a lot of expertise in, I'm going to start putting out information that talks about that niche, information that talks about case studies, that talks about the best kind of buildings. So you're basically becoming an educator or an interviewer. So there's a couple different kind of approaches you can take. You can take sort of the journalist slash interviewer approach. That's sort of like Oprah Winfrey. You know, she's the highest paid media personality in the world. That says something about the power of that approach, right? So you have lots of actors and actresses that make a whole lot of money, but Oprah makes more than all of them because she's taken an alternate route, which is where she compiles other people's information and shares it. So there's a lot of different strategies that, so definitely don't let that hold you back. If you see that, you know, your highest scoring niche on this is something that you don't have a lot of experience in, don't discount it, because we will show you strategies for being able to market that, even if you don't have a lot of experience there. So I hope that makes sense.
Yep, great answer. That's exactly what I was said was, you know, start being an educator. Just remember, you don't have to be a professor. You don't have to write academic articles at that level. You're writing articles and providing education for people like me who are, you need to dumb it right down. So it needs to be simple stuff that explains things, explains how to solve basic problems that you think are really dumb and obvious. But to me, it's, that's how you do it. I didn't know that. And my assumption is that because you were teaching me and you were giving me some very basic, simple educational material that's going to help me get from where I am here to where I want to be, because you're providing that information, my assumption is that you must be good. You know, we assume that teachers, speakers, lecturers, presenters, you know, hopefully you assume that we know what we're talking about in the Architect Marketing Academy because we're the teachers. No, you know. So that's a great answer by Yannick. I think we're almost up to the hour. So any other questions coming in around niche targeting? Come in. Go on.
There are some good ideas, just follow-ups for Greg about differentiation that I've responded to so that you can see them, such as, you know, Greg can offer existing offices an evaluation of their space to get in before they even think they have a need. So that's an interesting approach to, let's say, make a connection before they actually are looking for an architect. If you know that there's a typical problem that they may not be aware of that you can actually solve, then it can be challenging. But boy, if you can do that, you can be in before anyone else, and they're going to be, of course, looking to your solution now that you've identified that there's an issue and an opportunity to resolve it. So I know we have Otto on the line, so this is Otto's thing, so we can probably move on to look at Otto, and I'll open up Otto's line.
So Otto's in New Zealand. He's based up in the Bay of Islands, which is probably one of the most beautiful places in the world to be. It's even New Zealand. It's the top. You know, New Zealand's considered sort of top 20% for nice places to go to. Bay of Islands is the top 20% of the top 20%. It's a stunning place to live. And he's up in Russell, which is probably one of the best places there. So can you hear us, Otto?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Your line's a bit rattly. So you've done it. You're Swiss, aren't you, Otto, originally?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I moved over in 2000 from Switzerland to New Zealand.
Okay, great. Welcome to New Zealand. So you've done a typically detailed Swiss filling this out. You've reformatted and gone into great detail. So tell us about your experience of going through this and what your insights were by doing the exercise, Otto.
Actually, I was already in this specific niche during the 15 years I'm here. So all these questions, they are just underlining what I'm already focusing on. But it's good to have a wider wider experience what could be or what could happen. So it helps me, of course, to find my way through. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Good. So let's have a look at the, Otto's gone into great detail here on each of these. Sorry, I've got a dog here, which is...
The dogs.
Summary. Oh, no, you didn't put down what's the right niches to target and what's the wrong niches to target. After doing this exercise, Otto, sorry, I'm going to have to get my dog sorted. But if you can just do a summary...
We'll cover for you, Richard. Otto, can you tell us, after going through this exercise, is there one niche that stands out that you'd like to focus on?
Well, I didn't do yet the evaluation of it because I subdivided the task into two pieces. First of all, I wanted to make clear with you, with your help, with your input, if I am on the right niches, these three niches, if I defined it well, if these are valuable niches and so on. And now the second stage for me is to evaluate them.
Okay.
But of course, I have a feeling from the description already that it will be either alterations or new houses up in the Bay of Islands, very restricted to geographically. That's my feeling, but I didn't do the evaluation yet.
Okay. Oh, I see. So you haven't filled out the, you haven't rated them out of 10 to those areas yet?
No, not yet.
No, okay, good. Okay. But you've gone to, obviously gone to a lot of detail and depth and thinking as to what are these specific issues for each of these. So that's great. I think you're a deep thinker. So that's good. Hopefully that this is able to trigger you off into an area which makes a lot of sense for you. Okay. And your line's not very good, Otto, so all right.
Okay.
Do you have any questions, Otto? About this exercise or about niching in general?
Alan is my friend who is sitting next to me, and he is better in English, and he is a very clever guy and very helpful, and so he will articulate better than I the questions we have got. Please, Alan.
Okay.
I think the biggest problem that Alan is grappling with is how to reach his clients.
Right.
Particularly because they tend to live elsewhere, either in Auckland or in some cases overseas, and they're only in the Bay of Islands for short periods of time, maybe 6 months of the year for overseas people or less, or on holiday at their vacation for city people. So the biggest challenge he faces is how to reach them, particularly when they're making decisions.
Right. Good point. Yeah, because they're out of town a lot. They're often second homes or things like that. So one thought that I've got on this, and Eric and Enoch might have some other thoughts, but I had a similar situation with a guy in the Hudson Valley who a lot of his clients were wealthy sort of bankers in New York on Wall Street. And they second homes. So I think one of the answers is can you access them through other people? So rather than try and find them themselves, obviously you can target houses, but if they're not there, you put things in the mailbox. But if they're not there for 6 months, it's a bit harder maybe. But the question might be, that might help, is who else, when they are in contact with people in your area, who else are they in contact with? You know, who else do they deal with in the area? So as an example, do they talk to real estate agents? Do they talk to builders? Do they talk to, I don't know, who else do they talk to? And your approach might be, once you've identified a list of the type of people that they may talk to before they talk to an architect, is then say, right, we are going to focus on setting up a communication channel with those influencers, with those people. So we're going to be top of mind with the people that influence the type of clients we want to reach. Now, there's good and bad in that. The bad is, okay, you're not dealing directly with the person themselves, but the great is that these people, if this is high leverage, you're dealing with the influences of the people you're trying to reach if you can come up with that list. Okay, so we have coming up in one of the modules coming up not too far away is a strategy called the Super Six. And basically the strategy is around identifying who are the key influences for your market, and let's do a marketing campaign, or let's do a communication plan to those people. Okay, so sometimes you don't need to find the end client. You need to find the people who influence the client. So the strategy we'll cover there is come up with a list of 30 people who influence the type of people you're trying to reach, and let's set up a communication plan to those to make sure when they're talking to another one of the clients you're trying to reach, your mind, your name is top of their mind. So,
so there's an interesting comment from Cameron saying, for one of these potential connecting types of businesses or people, check with local property management companies who might be looking after the holiday home while owners are away. So in terms of renovation, they may know of people who have been, you know, having their homes managed while they're away, and they may know that sometimes they've expressed some comments about, you know, God, at some point we really want to fix this place up, you know, or we want to add on to it. And so they would obviously be a potential way of connecting for alterations, or maybe for knockdown and rebuild, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, property management would be perfect to be on your list. Because the owners are probably going to the property manager and saying, hey, we're going to come over here, we're going to spend a bit more time. Can you recommend an architect for us? And the property manager will go, oh. Now, if you've been communicating with the property manager through, you know, we're going to suggest newsletters, we're going to do some newsletters for you, and you could be sending the newsletters that we're going to three-quarter produce for you, you could be sending it out to people like the property managers and anyone else you think should be on that list. So that's a great, whoever gave us that suggestion, obviously definitely a person that should be on that dirty 30 list. Does that help, Alan?
Yes, that's very relevant. Thanks.
Yeah, brilliant. All right. Okay. In fact, for all of you, I mean, not just people in a hut, that strategy of finding out who are the influencers probably applies to all of you. If I was to go generically, it seems for architects in general, it seems one of the best lead sources is builders. So I would be creating a communication strategy. I'd have 30 people on my list. Some of them would be definitely builders. Some of them would be real estate agents or realtors. In some cases, bankers, you know, people who you know, make finance available. Past clients would be on my list of key influences because, of course, a lot of people come to their house. It's like an open showroom. I'd be forming that list now. We're going to give you some tools to communicate with this list, but start having a think about it now and have a think about what you could do each month to communicate to those key influences. That's high leverage. You know, some of them are speaking to 20 or 30 people that you're trying to find. You say, where are they? And they're speaking to 20, 30 of these people a week. So, you know, you need to market yourself to those people, and they will do the job. So it's a great, it's a great strategy for you guys, for almost all of you on this call.
I also want to caution our members. Obviously, I think Otto, from what he said, it sounds like he may be a little bit more advanced. Speaking as an architect, I know the temptation here is going to be, this is great, but how do I contact my clients? OK, Okay, how do I reach the people who might be prospects for my architecture practice? Okay, we've structured the training modules in a way that we know they work sequentially, and there's a reason why we structure them like this. So on this call, we're focusing on 80-20 targeting. Now, Richard's just given you some excellent ideas for getting leads, but I just want to make sure that that's not your primary takeaway from this call. Okay, even if you think that's a wonderful idea, great, go ahead and start implementing that. Make sure that you have your 80-20 targeting worksheet done. Make sure you've gone through this process. That's how important it is. And you know, if there's one thing you're going to take away on this call, I would say it's supposed to be the 80-20 targeting. So I'm sure there are some of you out there that, you know, maybe here's some cool new strategy and you kind of want to go off in one direction, but don't do that prematurely. Just trust us, stay with the system, you know, do the exercises, because this part is so essential to that lead generation campaign. If you jump ahead to what Richard was just talking about, you don't have this done, then you're going to end up with the effective marketing that the other 90% of architects are doing out there, because they don't have a message that's adapted to the right market.
All right. So can everybody on the call just type in, what's your big takeaway around this niching and this 80-20 principle and trying to find the ideal niche? What have your takeaways been from today? What's your big concept that you've picked out, or big idea or insight or revelation or epiphany that you've had today? Please share and we'll share the answers. Good morning to all those who are, you know, it's probably two, what is it, about 2:30, 3 o'clock for in the morning. If is it Suranesh in India? He got up at 1 for this call. It's coming to, it's all right now for Michael Tolhurst in Canberra. He's probably got his family up now eating breakfast. Whereabouts are you in the world? It's probably late afternoon for a lot of the Americans, Canadians. We probably don't even have, what would it be, 9 at night? Oh, okay, the British, the Europeans, you guys will be all right. It'll be late at night for you.
So Timon says big takeaway is specialization. John makes a great point. I need to keep practicing while I take time to identify my niche. So that is the key here, is that, yeah, don't stop everything. Remember, we're not identifying the niche for your practice, or we're identifying the niche for your first marketing campaign that we're going to be setting up, helping you set up.
Yep. That's exactly right. You may find ultimately that the niche for your marketing campaign becomes the niche for your business ultimately, but that's not what we're saying. We're saying let's pick a niche for your marketing campaign. So good distinction. Any other takeaways or insights for people?
Yeah, Colleen, who I know is going to be one of our action takers here, says, my takeaway is do homework and submit it the day before, and there is no 100% perfect niche. There are good, bad, better, or worse. It's a great, great insight.
Yeah, well done.
Lori said her takeaway was how to enter a niche that you don't have a large portfolio in, and we're going to be talking more about that. Sundar says positioning ourselves with respect to the market size and niche. And then Otto says, questioning whether we have gone far enough in the niches. And Michelle has a similar insight. I can see multiple niches opening up. A closer analysis may allow me to merge niches or shape niches. Yep. So, and ultimately, this whole exercise can be worthless if you don't implement a marketing campaign. So that's where the rest of what we're going to be sharing with you, as you continue through this program, it's going to become valuable, because that's going to provide all the pieces that are going to make you get results from this. So don't walk away from this thinking, oh man, I've done it, my marketing's good, I have a good idea of my niche, everything's going to be hunky-dory now. No, now we're going to take this and we're going to plug in your marketing message, we're going to plug in the lead generation, we're going to plug in some follow-up sequences, and we're going to have that system that we showed you on that webinar that a lot of you attended.
Now, one interesting thing, Meta is on the call, and Meta's been an action taker since she got started with the Marketing Academy a few months back. And she said that this is the second time going through this. The first time, her niche was, just bringing up, new modern homes. The second time, it's new modern vacation homes, even more specific. So The point here, separate from Meta's specific example, is that by looking at this periodically, in other words, do it now, do the best you can. There was another question like, I don't quite know what numbers I should put. I don't feel confident. I said, just do what you can. In other words, make a first pass at it. It'll help you crystallize your thoughts. Maybe you want to do a little more research in certain areas or do some brainstorming or get some advice, but do a first pass. That'll help you to see sort of your top contenders and then start working on at least one of them as, you know, the chosen one to get started with. Later you can get more specific. Later you can add in a second one or a third. So in other words, it's an iterative process as with all design. You know, marketing is just in a sense very similar to design in that you come up with a broad concept and you focus it in and you make certain decisions along the way, and you don't have to get dialed really tight in right at the beginning, because you're going to get feedback from your market, feedback from your colleagues, or feedback from us, or just the experience when you talk and when you try things. So in other words, move forward, don't worry about being perfect, just get some action going, fill in the forms and make some choices based on those forms for what to focus on.
And that's a great example, Eric, of where if you're just starting this program, that's where you could be in a certain amount of time. So it's good to have Meta on here because she's gone through this process before. Now she's starting to do some cool things that you'll be hearing about because she's going to be sharing her successes with us. But she's starting to form relationships with editors at magazines. I've been talking to Meta, and I know that she's, you know, pitching an article. So now that she has this vacation home niche focused and identified, then she can really start to do the marketing. Okay? If she didn't have that already in place, then, you know, having those connections might be valuable, but not quite as valuable as if she'd already done this process. So, you know, for those of you who are new to this, just look forward to that in a year's time when you have this kind of stuff in place and you're starting to make those relationships, and that's where you're going to see the massive advances.
So there's one question here that I think I want to bring up. Juan Pesolani asks, will we get feedback on our worksheets after the webinar is over? So these office hours calls, these Q&A calls, are the best times for you to get direct feedback from us, you know, partners in Architects Marketing. This is when we devote our time to giving you specific feedback. Now, as you work on this is primarily for you to sort of think about. There will be many ways to get feedback beyond just our, you know, the three of us. For example, when you work with Jesse McAnally, our marketing implementation coach, you know, you can talk with her about some of your ideas and she'll be happy to give you some feedback or at least help you to crystallize it. We also have the member forum, which we've set up on LinkedIn, and you've all been invited to that. If you have specific questions like, I'm looking at this niche and I'm a little unclear how to assess something, put that in there. Other members will give you feedback not only, you know, on your specific question, but from their perspective. Oh, I'm working on this. We're really helping each other here, and the three of us will, to some extent, respond when you put in a ticket, you know, support ticket saying, here's my 80-20 thing. You know, if we can, we'll take a look at it, but, you know, there are a lot of different places you can get that feedback.
And the feedback from other architects is usually excellent if you go on the LinkedIn, where they have thought about these things before, and there's lots of them on there answering questions and asking questions, so it's a good place. All right. So, any final thoughts or comments from in the chat box? If not, it's been a good session. Any final thoughts or comments in the chat box, Eric?
Looking to see here. Okay, one nice comment from Cameron saying, it sounds as though niches don't need to be static but can be modified or manipulated as new information is learned. Yes, definitely refinement and adjustment based on your experience and based on information new thinking for sure. It's really targeting, okay? You know, and if you think, it's an interesting example would be the game of golf. You know, I mean, it's not a perfect example because there are, let's say, a sequence of holes and you go through one after another, and that's not the same as developing niches. But on the other hand, if you think about just getting from one point to another, you know, no golfer, I mean, it's very, very rare that they'll have a hole in one, that they'll actually hit it and it'll go right into the cup. Usually they'll hit it and it'll go sort of in the right direction, and then they'll hit another one and they'll get closer, and after two or three or five, you know, strokes, they'll be close or right in there. So this is a not a game, but certainly a process where you're heading in a direction that's hopefully got some gold in there, you know, that's got some value for you, and it has a good fit for your skills, experience, and interests, and that over time, that's going to, you know, just be refined and adjusted. And of course, if you start becoming very successful in one niche, that may be all you need. But you may say, this is moderately successful, and now I want to add on a second or a third. So, you know, obviously, there are many practices where there are two or three niches that are all contributing to keeping the firm viable and, in fact, growing it. So, yeah, this is a process that you can keep revisiting every so often.
Great. All right. So that's good, everybody. So thanks for joining us on the call. And like I say, if you've got questions, then you can fire them through to support@architectsmarketing.com. support@architectsmarketing.com. Otherwise, put them on the LinkedIn member. If you haven't signed up for the LinkedIn members group, then make sure you're on that. Otherwise, that's a wrap. That's a wrap from me anyway.
So I'll be posting the recording. So this will be available for you and for all of our future generations going through the Marketing Academy. We're really excited to be bringing this to you. I'm really delighted to be working with Enoch and Richard. So thanks for joining us today.
See you.